This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News from newsroom.wgxc.org, where you can go to find links to all the local publications, Twitter feeds, blogs, newspapers, magazines, and more at newsroom.wgxc.org. WGXC correspondent Kelly Benjamin is in Durban, South Africa all week at the United Nations Climate Change Conference, where talks have continued with civil society organizations and environmental activists, ramping up pressure on UN delegates to come to a legitimate and binding treaty to address runaway climate change. Of particular concern for some countries in the green is the Green Climate Fund and how it will be implemented. Kelly Benjamin is at the climate talks in Durban and brings us this report.
What do we want?
Climate justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
On a small patch of grass directly across the street from the UN climate change talks in Durban today, members of civil society organizations and environmental groups gathered to occupy COP17, the 17th annual Global Climate Change Summit.
The World Bank is the biggest supporter of polluting industries. The World Bank is supporting extractive industries who are killing community people, who are destroying environments, who are giving false hope to poor people. And the World Bank must be stopped.
That's the voice of Nimu Basi, chair of Friends of the Earth International, an environmental organization that, like many of the NGOs here at the Climate Summit, are accusing the World Bank of turning their backs on developing nations, many of which are already feeling the effects of climate change. Again, Nimu Basi.
The World Bank and some countries are trying to turn it into a greedy corporate fund, opening up space for private sector to step into the pot, grab the funds, and bypass national or community needs and interests. In this way, they're going to continue funding dirty development projects and then continue to inflict harm on communities.
The Green Climate Fund that Basi is referring to was a fund agreed to at the last round of international climate talks in Mexico in 2010. It requires developed countries to provide $100 billion to developing nations by 2020 to help them create low-carbon economies and deal with the effects of global warming, which scientists say is caused largely by the pollution of industrialized nations. But earlier this week, the United States, one of the world's largest greenhouse gas polluters, reiterated its rejection of the fund, citing concerns about how the money would be raised. The U.S. wants more involvement of private businesses in the fund, which has prompted climate justice activists like Janet Redman, director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network, to cry foul.
The World Bank inside is trying to capture something called the Green Climate Fund, which is supposed to channel about $100 billion a year to developing countries. And they want to be the center of that fund. They want to house that fund. But we're saying absolutely not. Certainly not until they change their undemocratic structures, and certainly not until they stop financing the problem. Right now, they're actually increasing their financing of fossil fuels, the stuff that causes global warming. And last year alone, they increased their coal funding by about 600%. So it's egregious that they would even consider being a part of this Green Climate Fund.
Despite these apparent contradictions, the Green Climate Fund is supported by the G77, China, and the 27-member European Union. The Alliance of Small Island States, many of whom say they are feeling the effects of climate change now, say they need the money desperately, but are still concerned about some of the provisions of the climate fund. The World Bank's envoy on climate change, Andrew Steer, says that's because there is increasing demand from developing nations for money to deal with the repercussions of climate change.
What we've found at the World Bank is that the countries we work with, who in the old days would say, look, help us on A, B, C, D, E, but climate change wasn't necessarily in that A, B, C, D, or E, are now saying, look, you know, if there are three or four things that you can work with us on, we want one of those things, and a very, very important one, to be climate change.
Discussions at the UN Climate Summit on the Green Climate Fund, as well as the second commitment of the Kyoto Protocol and the controversial carbon trading markets, will continue into next week. From Durban, South Africa, this is Kelly Benjamin.
Germantown's free jazz legend Sonny Rollins was honored alongside Meryl Streep, Yo-Yo Ma, Neil Diamond, and Barbara Cook at the Kennedy Center Sunday, December 4th. President Barack Obama introduced each honoree, and this is what he had to say about Sonny Rollins. Quote, when Sonny Rollins was growing up, he and his friends would sneak into jazz clubs by drawing mustaches on themselves. with an eyebrow pencil to try to look older. Did that work, Sonny? We don't know if it fooled anybody, but they did get into the clubs. Harlem in the 1930s was a hotbed of jazz, and for a young musician with a big horn and bigger dreams, it was heaven. Duke Ellington and Coleman Hawkins lived around the corner. Sonny learned melody and harmony from Thelonious Monk, and Miles Davis was a regular playing partner. It wasn't long before Sonny earned the nickname the Saxophone Colossus and became known as one of the greatest improvisers in the history of jazz. Today he often plays hour-long solos without any repetition, leaving audiences speechless. People sometimes wonder how he can play for so long, but in Sonny's words, quote, "It just means there's something out there, and I don't know, and I know I have to find it." Sonny also loves to roam the crowd during a performance. One story goes that he was halfway through a solo one night when he jumped off the stage and disappeared. Just when the band was about to go looking for him, the solo started back up. Sonny had broken his foot and was lying on the floor, but he finished the set with so much energy and passion the audience didn't notice. To hear Sonny tell it, he was just keeping things pure. "The worst thing in the world for me is to play by rote," he says. "You have to play from the inside. That's real jazz." Thomas Kaplan in the New York Times reports that Governor Andrew Cuomo may, after all, raise taxes on the wealthy to solve some of the state's budget woes. So far, Cuomo has refused to renew a so-called millionaire's tax, but now he is reconsidering in the face of a larger-than-expected budget deficit. State lawmakers may return to Albany as soon as today to consider budget remedies. Kaplan's story in the New York Times says legislative leaders were considering creating new tax districts with higher tax rates for the state's largest incomes. You can read that full story in the New York Times. Local governments have complained for years about unfunded mandates, laws from the federal government or states that require local governments to do something in particular without providing any money to pay for that action. State Senator James Seward, Republican, conservative, and independent of Oneonta, who represents Greene County and Albany, has a new reverse unfunded mandate. Seward is circulating an online petition to shift Medicaid funding from local governments to the state. Seward says the property tax cap signed into law earlier this year is limiting local governments' abilities to pay for Medicaid, so he wants the state to pay for it in Senate Bill 5889B, which proposes an 8-year gradual state takeover of the local Medicaid costs. By 2019, the state would shoulder Medicaid costs, but Seward does not say how New York would pay for those new costs. The Daily Mail's Melanie Lakosovic reports that Coxsackie's town board voted to override the state's new 2% tax cap, with Councilman Jeffrey Lewis the sole dissenting voice. Coxsackie's 2012 budget is 7.5% larger than 2011. The pension bill alone, $180,000, represents 18.9% of the town's total payroll. Town Supervisor Alex Betke told the Daily Mail he didn't want to borrow to cover operating costs this year. Instead, Betke said Coxsackie is cutting part-time hours in, quote, every department. The highway department's part-time hours will be cut in half, as will the town's support for a senior's bus trip. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. Today is Tuesday, December 6th, and National Weather Service predicts it will rain throughout much of the area with a high near 53. The forecast for the rest of the week: Wednesday, a 20% chance of rain, otherwise mostly cloudy with a high near 43. Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 43. And Friday, partly sunny with a high near 42. Town meetings tonight: Catskill, the town board, meets at 6:30 p.m. Copaic, the park commission, meets at 7 p.m. at town hall. In Durham, there's a town board meeting at 7:30 p.m. at the town building in East Durham. In Lexington, the town board meets at 7 p.m. at the municipal building. In Livingston, there's a Zoning Board of Appeals meeting at 7 p.m., and the Columbia County's Finance Committee meets at 5 p.m. at the County Office Building in Hudson. Sun rises at 7:05 a.m. and sets at 4:29 p.m. The moon rises at 1:56 in the afternoon and sets at 3:21 a.m. And tune into Battlefield Earth tonight at 9:30 p.m. with Dan Seward on 90.7 WGXC.